How did you get interested in the binary star theory?
Well, I noticed all these articles, like I said, that came out in the papers in the 80s, mm-hmm. and there was a, in the 1987 New Science and Invention Encyclopedia, they list that they sent the pioneers out to look for the dwarf star, the brown star. Actually, back then, it used to be called a black star. They rechanged the name from a black dwarf to a brown dwarf. But I started looking into it there, and then, you know, lo and behold, I start researching all this stuff, and everything just falls into perfect line for this being an event that causes basically our magnetic field to fall down. That's why we're getting all this extra sun stuff happening. It affects our sun tremendously. It affects the planet, and it goes by, and then we start over, and there are 3,600 years, it happens again.
Now, a brown dwarf basically is an object that is too low to sustain its hydrogen fusion. So it's not like our sun. What's it doing, Lucas?
Well, basically what it does is it's a very dense ball of hydrogen gas and other gases, and it's almost invisible. It's very, very close to invisible because it's so cold. It's only between 10 and 40 degrees above absolute zero. And what it does is it emits all of its energy in a form of subatomic particles as radiation. And that's why we can't see it, because basically light doesn't bounce back off of it. They didn't even detect the first brown dwarf star until 1995.
Has it got mass to it?
Oh, yes. It's got a lot of mass. It's probably about 8 times the mass of Jupiter. And
which is what they think they have found somewhere out there in the solar system.
Yeah. Well, basically, they're preparing the public. The powers that be and the governments are really stuck in a catch-22 situation here. They can't tell the public, but yet they want the public to prepare for this. So they're trying with things like this and all these TV shows about survival and, you know, Armageddon and all this stuff. They're trying to slowly get this into the public mindset so that people start to prepare now and not everybody rush out at the last second and empty the store shelves.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, why did they talk about it, though, in terms of being a possible planet, as opposed to saying it's a brown dwarf star?
Well, I suspect that that's part of the disinformation campaign, because as long as it's called a planet, then every astronomer in the world is going to say, oh, we would have saw a planet out there by now. So if it's labeled a brown dwarf star, then people would understand a little more that it's near impossible to see. In fact, even if it's like right up not far from Earth, all it's going to appear to us is a big dark circle in the sky.
Well, if you say planet, it sounds heavenly, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
It's got that illusion of that feel that, hey, maybe it's got life, maybe it's like ours. But when you say a brown dwarf star, that truly gives you that dark perception that there's something wrong out there.
Yeah, this thing has been around most likely since the extinction of the dinosaurs. If you look at the historical ice core data, you can see that the world had a certain way about it, the temperature. And all of a sudden, when the dinosaurs were wiped out, the world went into this cyclical type of rising and fall of the temperatures.
Did this star get captured into our solar system, or was it always there when the solar system formed?
Well, I do believe it got captured. The Sumerians, their theory is that Earth was struck by this object long time ago, which formed the moon. They called it Nibiru. And basically this object is what broke off our moon, or actually, I'm sorry, one of its moons hit planet Earth and broke off our, you know, the pieces that formed our moon today. And it's been in this binary orbit ever since.
Now, the Sumerians also believe, though, that the Anunnaki came from this planet or whatever it is.
Right. Now, that might just be misconstrued. They might have just come around about that time period. Like, you're seeing all this, you know, this UFO activity now has been tremendously heightened over the last couple of years. So maybe they're just here to witness the event. Maybe they're here to help. Maybe. Who knows?
Well, and there could be more than one extra object out there, Lucas.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there could be the brown dwarf star orbited by another couple little bodies. That's for sure.
Now, this one, the astronomers are calling it Tycho, and they claim that it is massive in size. They are pretty sure there's something out there, though a few other astronomers are saying no, they don't believe it. But I don't know. I tend to like what these other researchers are saying, that there's something out there.
Well, do you know what Tycho means?
It's a goddess, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a goddess, but it's the sister of Nemesis.
Well, there you are.
Yeah, so it's a real coincidental.
Now, is every star system in this universe got a binary twin to it?
No. They've recently found out that most stars, the majority of stars, are in a binary, trinary, or even more star orbit. But for our sun to be a single star would be the exception to the rule.
Okay, now, if it's out there, what and it was captured, how did it get captured, first of all?
Oh, it's probably just a, you know, like I said, it's a ball of gas. It's an undeveloped star, one that never had enough mass to become a bright star.
Really, never got ignited yet.
Exactly, it didn't have enough mass to cause a nuclear fusion reaction at its core. So, basically, it was probably just wandering around and just got locked in an orbit with our sun, you know, long, long time ago, and it's been there ever since.
And if it is on this 3,600 year elliptical orbit, as Zechariah Sitchin has proposed, God rest his soul. And then it comes around, it comes close to our planet, and that's when we have this havoc all the time?
Yes, basically what it does, let's take the moon, for instance. As the moon goes around the planet, it forms a little tiny tsunami called a tide. A bulge of water follows the moon around the planet. Well, this object is very dense, super dense. Maybe a couple inches of it would weigh thousands of pounds. And what happens is, as it comes up from the south, a wave forms down in the south, and the world still spins, but the wave stays in one place, focused towards the star, and as it moves north, once it reaches the equator, where the water is much deeper due to centrifugal force, the spinning of the Earth, the waters pile up, and they basically wash over the land, and then it passes by, and everybody restarts, and here we go.
The flood of the Noah's flood?
Well, yeah, the Noah flood, the Atlantis flood. It's really unique how everything ties into this 3,600-year orbit. You have 3,600 years ago, you had the fall of Jericho, Sodom and Gomorrah, the exodus from Egypt, the destruction of the first Babylonian yeah. kingdom, the Sup civilization, the Shia, the Minoans, the first Egyptian dynasty, the Indus Valley people. That all their civilization collapsed at the same time. Then if you go back 3,600 years before that, you've got the creation of the Byzantine calendar, which we go by today. There was all these super volcanoes that erupted, mega tsunamis. Then you go back before that is when Plato dated Atlantis to sinking, right? And then you go back 3,600 years before that, and you had all the extinction of the giant mammals of the world, like the mammoths, the giant American deer, things like that.